CKLN listeners, you're listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box. 9:47. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ, for a Thursday. Hopefully you enjoyed Natasha and Nyla's beautiful, beautiful, soulful vibes they put out there. Not just the music, but their personality, as they are two lovely, lovely ladies. And if you do get a chance to listen to them from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. on a Wednesday evening, then or Thursday morning, then you are most certainly lucky. On the phone today, we have Ms. Sophie Harkat, wife of Mohammed Harkat, who's detained on security certificates in Canada. Sophie, can you say a couple of things?
Yes, good morning.
Okay, good morning. There we go. Fantastic. Sophie, give us a bit of a breakdown of the Harkat case, just for people here who are unfamiliar with it.
My husband was arrested on December the 10th, 2002, which happens to be International Human Rights Day, on a security certificate, which allows the government to arrest and detain people without charging access to the evidence because they called so-called threats to national security. My husband was later thrown in jail for 43 months without charge or access to the evidence, then was released under the toughest bail conditions in Canadian history. In June of 2006, and has been living under these restrictive bail conditions since then. In the meantime, we won a Supreme Court challenge back in 2007 that the Supreme Court found security certificate to be unconstitutional, and the government had 1 year to redraft a new law, which they did, which was they only made cosmetic changes to the law that wasn't working already, and they added special advocates, which are special counsels that see the secret evidence but cannot discuss that information with the public counsel or the detainee itself. So we remain in the dark and the secrecy continues. We just found out with the process about the special advocates that they do not have access to UN sources or informants. They can't cross-examine informants in secret proceedings, in camera, some human sources, and in our case, we have an informant that failed the lie detector test, which was the main person who led to all the allegations. And so he failed the lie detector test before my husband was arrested, and his credibility was never tested in secret proceedings with special cleared lawyers. And so
basically, you had was this a person from jail? Was this a person
nope.
from jail, or who testified nope. against your husband?
Listen, we know who that individual is. He lives in Ottawa. I can't say his name, but he was a friend of ours before my husband got arrested. We found out just by, you know, reading the second allegation report through the allegations themselves, through some of the so-called transcripts, because in our case, every piece of original material was destroyed as well. Like, there's no intercept, there's no notes, there's no original interviews, there's absolutely nothing original in her case. Everything was destroyed. The Shakari case went to the Supreme Court on that back in 2007 because all we have are transcripts of what was said or whatever. So through some of the transcripts, we recognize some of those individuals.
And that's amazing. Sophie, you don't go by Harkat as your last name, or do you?
Yes, I do. Well, LaMarche is my name before I married, but I go under Harkat.
Okay, we're speaking with Sophie LaMarche, or Sophie Harkat, the wife of Mohammed Harkat, here on March 17th, 2011. And this is important stuff here for Rude Awakening listeners who follow this show on Mondays and Thursdays, or who are generally aware of what's going on in Canada. You know, a lot of people say, you know, oh, it'll never happen here, it'll never happen here. Well, the case of Mohammed Harkat proves it is happening here, as he's basically been detained and or restricted by a security certificate here in Canada since 2006, which basically means with no evidence or no evidence that would be used in court or that has been used in court and has been proven using procedural law. He's been suspected of being a potential terrorist or a possible terrorist or whatever, and sort of just restricted in where he's allowed to go and what he's allowed to do. And this is happening here in Canada. Sophie, let's get back to your husband's case in a second, but you're probably aware of other cases. How many cases like this are there in Canada?
Well, we used to call it Secret Trial 5. There used to be 5 ongoing cases. There used to be Shakawi in Montreal, Hassan Amri from Toronto, Maju from Toronto, and Jabala, also from Toronto. Two certificates were quashed in 2009. That was Shakawi. Kawi and Amre, and our certificate was upheld December the 9th, 2010, which was a total shock for us because there's been so much abusive process on our part from CSIS that really the legal community across the country was just shocked, and the supporters that we had lost our certificate because there was numerous factors. I mean, one, the informant failed the lie detector test, and the judge struggled with the credibility of the informant, but still went with his word versus my husband's word. On the stand, my husband's got the same story twice during his testimony because we went through the hearing the same process back in 2005. They listened, CBSA and CSIS listened to solicitor client calls. They raided our house in May of 2000, 2 years ago, to get some so-called evidence 2 weeks prior to our hearing. So they took my computer, they took whatever they could find in my house that would help them build a case. They took 20 boxes out. We had to go to court for that. That was also found unconstitutional. They sent in 16 CBSA officers, 2 OPP, 2 RCMP, 3 sniffing dogs, and the search turned out to be unconstitutional. I mean, that was a nightmare. Fourth point is that they use information that comes from and derives from torture. And fifth point is that all original material in their case was destroyed. So there was so much abusive process. If it was a regular criminal court, this case would not stand in court. Plus, my husband's never been charged of any crime, either in Canada or anywhere in the world. And we never had access to the evidence, just an allegation report that says, basically, in the past, present, or future, we assume, we allege, we think that he might be associated with terrorism.
Now, how did this all start? Ms. Sophie Harcott, and your website is harcottstatement.com, where over 3,000 Canadians have basically signed a petition saying they want to overturn the use of security certificates and free your husband from this?
Well, yes, we also have a website if you wish to have information. It's called justiceforharcott.com. But we started a second website. We have an online petition statement asking Canadians for support in the abolition of the security certificate process because of our second round. We hope to take this all the way back to the Supreme Court a second time on the constitutionality aspect when they added special advocates to the law. And we have thousands of people that signed, including, big groups and organizations like Amnesty International, Civil Liberties Monte Group, Bruce Coburn, Naomi Klein. If you go on our website, which is harcottstatement.com, and look on the right, some of our most prominent signatures are on the right side. But you can also view by categories. We have hundreds of groups from across the country and around the world that signed this petition asking for the abolition.
Absolutely.
Basically, if I may add, I mean, all we want is a fair trial. That's what we want. We want due process. So we want my husband to be charged. We want access to the evidence. We want him to be able to defend himself properly, openly. We want all Canadians to see the evidence. We want it to be tested. We want the credibility of the informants to be tested, of human sources. We want it to be out on the open so that all Canadians can see the truth. We want the truth to come out. That's all we want.
Well, absolutely, and it only makes sense. You've been going through this ordeal for 5 years now. How did this all start? And you can see Mohammed Harcott and Sophie Harcott's case and concerns at Justice for Harcott. It's Justice, FORHARKAT.com, or Harcott Statement, HARKAT Statement. .com, where you can sign the petition to help end his ordeal and Sophie's ordeal and the use of security certificates here in Canada. About 3,000 signatures so far. I signed myself, and thank you to Ottawa Fro, a colleague in Ottawa who works on these issues, for making a brilliant video highlighting this and bringing it to my attention again.
He did a brilliant job. He's been very supportive, and we have a lot of support across the country. One thing that we may have lost is some faith in the justice system, but we certainly didn't lose any faith in the Canadian people out there who believe in due process, who believe in justice, who believe in fairness and freedom, and who's been supporting us for years, and we thank them for that. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do this and continue. You know, the other thing I forgot to mention was that now my husband faces deportation to torture. It became an automatic deportation order after the certificate was upheld. So now we live with a huge cloud over our heads every day that my husband faces deportation, and he goes back to label. So he will face torture or death if returned to Algeria, as well as the other men that are from Egypt. And we there's this, the consequences of this are extremely serious.
Now, why would he, I mean, Algeria being Algeria, I don't know too much about it, except for the French being there for too long a few years ago. But why would your husband face torture in Algeria if he did go back?
Well, I mean, it's very clear. The political situation in Algeria is right now is upside down. They are supporters of Libya. My husband was also a member of the FIS, which is the Front Islamic Salute, when he left the country back in the early 90s. He's also labeled. And so he fled his country for a political situation back in the 90s. There was a civil war in Algeria. Hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives. And if he goes back with a terrorism label, he will be tortured or death. And there's been some cases that have been monitored by Amnesty International and Civil Liberties of people that have disappeared, actually, or people who've been jailed for years for being labeled terrorists in other countries. So it's documented that people there face persecution if they go back, and as well as other countries like Egypt, Syria. You know, you don't go back there a normal individual. You go back an individual that ran away from their country and an individual that goes back with labels.
Absolutely, and thanks to information about extraordinary renditions and torture flights out of America, out of Canada, out of Newfoundland, and to the Far East or to places in Europe and black sites. We do know that it's been admitted that the CIA and other intelligence agencies actually send people to some of these countries to be tortured. So it is part of standard police practice there. But Ms. Sophie Harkat at harkatstatement.com, H-A-R-K-A-T, statement.com. I'd like to know what happens when something unconstitutional happens to Canadian citizens. You mentioned that you were wrongly raided by CSIS and other agencies with drug sniffing dogs, and when you were in the midst of a sensitive case against the government, they basically confiscated your computer and other potential evidence and means that you have of organizing your case. So, what happens when something is ruled unconstitutional against these forces in Canada?
Well, I'd like to mention also that my computer was under lock and under pad and key when they came and took it. I mean, my computer's under lock because my husband can't access the Internet. And he can't have access to cell phones. We've got some very restrictive bail conditions, which we should talk about as well, because for 4.5 years, I was a prison guard to my husband, and we were prisoners in our home until the conditions changed suddenly in September of 2009. But what do we do when something like this is found unconstitutional? I mean, they violated the charter on numerous occasions, and all they get is a slap on the hand. They're being told, you know, don't do it again. Like, for example, they listen to solicitor-client calls, which is the most privileged thing between a client and a lawyer. It's counsel. Even those which are the most privileged things between counsel and client are being listened to. And I don't know how many times they'll have to violate the charter or you'll have to go to court to be found unconstitutional for them to keep repeating the same mistakes. I mean, just to give you an example in our case, for example, my husband in the allegation report was associated to an individual called Ib Kitab, which my husband has never met. We have no idea who this individual is, but the government claimed that my husband ran a guest house for Ib Kitab in Pakistan in the mid-1990s. And my husband has denied those allegations because we don't know who this individual is. And my husband never ran a guest house in Pakistan. He was working for an organization in Pakistan. In the meantime, the case of Hassan Amri, who is from Syria, himself admitted knowing Ib Kitab, admitted doing a training with Ib Kitab. But the problem with Ib Kitab is that we had an expert from the United States that came that testifies to the CIA, the FBI, and most of the big terrorism cases in support of the government, only testified twice against government because he really thought that we would, my husband was innocent of these allegations, because Ib Kitab is not a member of Al-Qaeda. He is a Chechen fighter who fought the war against Russia. And he used to have training camps, and he was located in Chechnya and other locations. But Hassan Amri admitted knowing Ibn Kitab and admitting working with Ibn Kitab. And my husband denied knowing Ibn Kitab and denied working with Ibn Kitab. And in Hassan Amri's case, the judge found that Ibn Kitab was not a member of Bin Laden. And in our case, our judge, which was a different judge, found that Ibn Kitab was a member of Al-Qaeda. And it was really outrageous, especially for the expert who's dedicated his whole life on Ibn Kitab, that one judge had found Ibn Kitab not be a member of Al-Qaeda, in our case, kind of redefine history by associating him to terrorism. So we have two different federal court judges who make two very different rulings on the exact same individual. On one level, he is a member of Al-Qaeda. On the other level, he has nothing to do with the Bin Laden network. And so that's very, very frustrating when even the federal court judges don't even agree on the same individual. I mean, the only thing you can do with allegation is deny them if you don't know what's behind them. Like I said, you don't have transcripts or you don't have, you just have transcripts. You don't have intercepts. You don't have interviews. You don't have any original material to say, yeah, that is me. Or do you have a photo, a passport, or a proof that, you know, you've been there and done this, and who said it, and when, and at what time? We don't have access to any of that.
It's amazing. I was speaking with Sophie Harkat from Justice for Harkat, HARKAT.com, or Harkat Statement, HARKATStatement.com. Strongly recommend you check out HarkatStatement.com and sign the petition. You don't have to be afraid. Over 3,000 people have signed it, including many prominent ones, and it's going to take things like this to accomplish something, much like here at CKLN Radio, when the CRTC was considering taking away our license, we got a stay of execution by getting around 6,000 signatures on a petition, which the CRTC then took seriously. So it is important to support the work of Sophie and Mohammed Harkat, her husband, who has been sort of illegally, well, certainly immorally, although, you know, the corrupt systems can certainly change laws, but immorally detained on a security certificate since 2006. And for listeners out there, Sophie, I'd like you to take us back to 2005, 2006, to say, how did this all happen? It sounds like a bizarre Kafka-esque nightmare where all of a sudden you're Canadians, you've been here since the 90s, and you know, you're just living your lives and doing X, Y, and Z. What events triggered this type of investigation?
Actually, my husband was arrested in 2002. The first certificate was upheld under the old process in 2005. And my husband arrived in Canada in 1995. I'm a Canadian citizen. I married my husband in Canada. I'm French-Canadian from Northern Ontario. So, I one thing I have to say is I'm also white. I'm not Muslim. Because the reason why I mentioned that is because when I came out with my husband's stories, there's some Canadians that were like, oh, poor, you know, poor Canadian who married this Muslim man. And I seem to have gotten more attention because of the fact that I was white and Canadian. That's really sad because the other women don't get as much attention because they wear the hijab or the niqab. It's unfortunate that way. But at the same time, I felt like I had a voice from the beginning, and I spoke on behalf of all the security certificate cases. And so my husband got refugee status, convention refugee status, in 1997, and he was working three jobs when I met him, gas station. He was delivering pizza at night, a very, very hard worker. And he's been, you know, paying his taxes and was a very good citizen. He had no criminal record in Canada whatsoever or anywhere in the world. And we met and married, and we've been married 10 years this year. And he was arrested in 02, two weeks short of her second wedding anniversary, and he was thrown in jail, and our lives got turned upside down. I mean, for 43 months, I saw my husband behind glass without any human contact, you know, talking through a phone, and every time I went to see him the first year, he was in solitary confinement. He wore shackles when they brought him, shackled to the wrist, to the waist, to the ankles. We were dehumanized, degraded in every way possible for the past couple of years. We don't know how we got into that situation. We think my husband, they used the fact that he didn't speak English very well when he came to this country. He had no family. He had been working for the Muslim World League in Pakistan, so the fact that he was in Pakistan was of interest to CSIS, and that he was basically had some friends which cannot be trusted, those informants I'm talking out there, specifically one in particular, which was paid by the CSIS to provide information which was untruthful. And we know that for a fact through the hearings that as a CSIS informant, the bigger the information you provide, the bigger the paycheck. And these individuals are promised anything they want. And, it's very disturbing how this how the Canadian intelligence services run their business here in Canada. And also, let's not forget that after 9/11, they've been using information that comes from or derives from torture. In our case, they claimed that my husband was associated to Abu Zubaydah, which nobody knew before 9/11. His name just came out after 9/11. But this individual was waterboarded constantly by the Americans. He's one of the most well-known cases of an individual that has been tortured repeatedly by the Americans. And the Americans actually even destroyed the video tapes of his torture. And so, you know, the case has been, there's been just so much abusive process along the way. And, you know, at this point, it's a lost situation. My husband, if he doesn't testify in federal court, then he's got something to hide. And if he does testify, then he's the one to be called a liar compared to the secret evidence. We're never going to win on this if this is not put out on the open for everyone to see. We would just want everyone to see the evidence so it can be, you know, criticized by everyone and shred apart by public counsel. We just want a fair trial. That's all we want. I mean, our lives were basically turned upside down, and we struggle every day for everything that we do. For example, after almost 4 years under the toughest bail conditions in Canadian history, the conditions were lifted in September of 2009, but my husband still wears a GPS unit around his ankle every day. He has to report once a week to the Canadian Border Service Agency. We cannot leave Ottawa without permission. He cannot use a computer or a cell phone. It's under lock in my house. We have a large, over a quarter of $1 million over his head as surety money. We have still quite a bit of conditions compared to 4 years ago. I would like to list those conditions later, but for example, we were followed when we went on outings 4 years ago by the Canadian Border Service Agency, between 2 to 6 officers wearing bulletproof vests and carrying weapons. And this week alone, they have parked in front of our home 3 times already this week. And they followed us on Saturday. And it's not part of the conditions right now, but they've been doing it right now. So they've been harassing us the past couple of weeks since the certificate has been upheld. My role as a surety is to assure the conditions, to watch my husband. I've been at the court-appointed surety. And just recently, like, they started hanging around the house again. Like, they park in front of our house in one of those big vehicles, and inside the car, they wear the bulletproof vests, and they look like police officers. And they harass us on a regular basis, and it's pure... They do everything possible to degrade us in every way possible, to dehumanize us in every way possible.
And we're speaking with Sophie Harcott from Harcott Statement, H-A-R-K-A-T, statement.com, or justiceforharcott.com, the wife of Mohammed Harcott, a Canadian basically detained and harassed since 2002 with the use of security certificates here in Canada, one of about a half a dozen or so people here in Canada who can basically be were detained without trial and given restrictive bail-like conditions without actually being charged with anything and convicted of anything here in Canada. So this type of thing does go on. And with respect to sort of the security services, getting or paying informants a ton of money to say the right things. We have the Toronto 18 case here, where the RCMP paid an engineer to join the Toronto 18 group because he was the only guy who was qualified to buy the fertilizer that was eventually delivered to a warehouse, which was what eventually set off the Toronto 18 case. So he was paid about $2 million. To basically join a group, order some fertilizer, and then have that group indicted for ordering fertilizer as a pretense to make a bomb. The RCMP also got $500 million out of the $1 billion security budget for the G20 summit last year here in Toronto, the G20 martial law experience we all had. and there's been many, many other cases of intelligence agencies ginning up things and basically fomenting. They need to keep their budgets. They need to keep themselves in business. And so there are many, many documented cases of them pulling stunts like this and trying to get informants to say the right things about the wrong people just to keep the whole war on terror circus going. Sophie Harcat, you have some recent news. I know you want to elaborate on that here on the show this morning. So can you give us the absolute latest updates on the case of your husband, Mohammed Harcat, and what you've been going through since 2002?
Well, the certificate was upheld on December the 9th, which was the eve of my husband's 8th-year anniversary of his arrest without detention, without charge or access to the evidence. And like I was saying before, we were totally shocked because of the abusive process that has been taking place on behalf of CSIS and the CBSA and the government. And right now, my husband faces deportation to torture. He received his deportation papers on January 21st. And in the meantime, we got access to, we were given the right to appeal. But before we were able to get the right to appeal, I'd like to explain what happened is that we actually don't have the right to appeal, but we had to submit certified question, which we had to be approved by the same judge who found the certificate to be reasonable, because the only judge only need to rule on the lowest standard of proof in Kane court and had reasonable grounds to believe that maybe in the past, present, or future, this individual may be associated to terrorism. That's just how they based their decision on. And so my husband was issued deportation papers, and on the same day we were given permission to appeal on two certified questions. We submitted, I think, 16 in total, and only two came back. One was on the constitutionality of the new process with the addition of special advocates, which do not give us access to the secret evidence. The special advocates cannot communicate with public counsel or the detainee, so we remain in the dark about the process. And second of all, on the fact that the special advocates do not have access to informants or certain human sources in secret proceedings, that means that they do not have access to cross-examination of the witness, of the informant, in secret proceedings in camera, where no one can see them, no one can hear them except the judge, the count, and the special advocates. They were not cross-examined, their credibility never tested. And so we got a certified question on that as well, which is a major and important factor in our case, since our informant failed the lie detector test, which led to most of the allegation against my husband. So that will be a very important defining certified question for us. So we are heading to the Federal Court of Appeal. We don't have a date for that yet. But in the meantime, in 2 weeks from now, March 29th, we will be presenting our petition statement to the Minister of Immigration and Citizenship, Jason Kenney. And so we hope to collect more signatures by then. We hope to go over a couple thousand signatures to tell the government, listen, people are paying attention to this. People want due process. People want fair and open trial. People support the abolition of the security certificate under the new constitutionality, on the new constitutional appeal we are leading on this. And we hope that the whole thing will come crashing down. Maybe we lost for a reason, and maybe it's for us to make the whole system come crashing down. I mean, it's really nice that a certificate is quashed, but until the certificate is still in place, individuals in this country could still be arrested, detained without charge, or access to the evidence. And you keep mentioning my husband as a Canadian. Yes, my husband lives in Canada, but it's important to mention that if only refugees or immigrants that can be arrested under the security certificate process, Canadians are arrested under the anti-terrorist legislation. And there's a lot of similarities. We are not shown the evidence, and these individuals are never charged. They were never, never charged of anything. That's the main reason. And for years and years, they are detained, and for years and years, they live under restrictive bail conditions. I mean, for many, many years, we had surveillance cameras in our home. We had one in our living room, one in our entrance. Our phone was intercepted. Our mail was intercepted. Everybody that came to our residence had to be pre-approved by the Canadian Border Service Agency. Had to provide picture, photo, no cell phones allowed in the house, no computers allowed in the house. My computer is under lock and key and under pad. Every outing, which was only three times a week for 4 hours each, had to be pre-approved 96 hours in advance to 46 hours in advance. Every location that we went to and every person that we met had to be pre-approved in advance. So, for example, if we want to go to a Tim Hortons that has not been put on a pre-approved outing, we cannot attend that location. The CBSA could enter our residence at any time. And when we went on outings, which was only 12 hours a week, the CBSA would follow us between two to three cars, and they would come with bulletproof vests, with wearing weapons, and they would follow us during our outings. And, you know, there was, my husband could not associate with people with criminal record, could not go near a train station, a bus station, an airport, could not leave Ottawa. When we went to the Quebec side, we had to use a pre-approved route. If you turn right on this street, turn left on this street to go to a specific location. So I was literally a prisoner in my home for 3 years. I had to take my husband to my doctor's appointment. The doctor had to be pre-approved in advance. We had to use public washrooms together because he could never be left alone. I mean, we lived a nightmare for three and a half to 4 years until the bail conditions were, some of the main things were lifted. Like, for example, my husband could never be left alone inside or outside the home. We had a curfew on the property, and my husband could never go in the backyard by himself and could never be inside the residence by himself. And so he needed court-appointed surety, and there was only two of us at the beginning, and me, I was doing it basically 24/7 because my mother was working full-time. And she couldn't come during the daytime, so I had to take my husband to medical appointments. As like I said, I had to get the appointment pre-approved. The CBSA came on our outings. My doctor had to be pre-approved. We basically lived a nightmare. We were dehumanized every way possible. And I want people out there to know that this is happening in this country, and this will keep happening unless the process is abolished.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Sophie Harkat from HarkatStatement.com, H-A-R-K-A-T, statement.com, where you can sign the statement, the petition to prevent Mohammed Harkat, her husband, from being deported after the persecution you've endured since 2002. You know, he shouldn't be deported. You guys should be given some sort of pension. And it really, you should be given some sort of, reparations for what you've been through. Sophie, I just want to ask you a question here. The government is not monolithic. Obviously, the things that they're doing to you are stupid on its face. You don't need to be surveilled and followed and allowed out for 2 hours a day. I mean, if you really were, if they really wanted to catch terrorists, they would let you operate a bit more freely and just spy on you like crazy. Hopefully you'd slip up and hopefully they'd catch some terrorists. So,
well, for example, I mean, anybody knows that if you use a cell phone, one of the easiest things to monitor is a cell phone. We don't have access to one. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a BlackBerry. I don't have a laptop. I mean, technology-wise, I'm behind on everybody because I just have my regular PC, which is locked in the basement, and I don't have access to any of that technology, so my husband cannot have access to it. But, you know, for many, many years, like I said, we had surveillance cameras in the home. We had people following us. The mail is intercepted. The phone is intercepted. That's after my husband's been arrested and then after they build a case against him. And every aspect of our lives was an open book to CBSA and CSIS. Like every card, like for example, Christmas cards that came from the mail, our visa bills, everything was photocopied. And that was shared between CBSA and CSIS. And they keep monitoring us like we're criminals. And, it's really disturbing. I mean, and that's surveillance that we know is happening. Think about the surveillance that we know is happening and people are not aware of it.
Right. The whole thing is stupid. And for all you cops, troops, mercs, and spooks out there, bureaucrats, everybody else, just think of how stupid this is where you basically, for year after year, you do that to these people, you don't find any evidence, and you keep the pressure up. And I mean, it's not, you're not doing it, but we're all part of this system in this country that has to understand that this is going on, has to understand that it makes absolutely no sense if he was a legitimate, threat or potential terrorist. To treat him like this anyway. This just seems like persecution and dehumanization to train the bureaucracy and members of our law enforcement community to dehumanize people.
Yeah, and you know, I want to mention something. I just have a huge blank, but we just want like a fair hearing. I mean, it's not very complicated what we want. You know, there's a criminal process out there that works, you know. and we would like to be charged under the criminal code. I mean, that's the way it should be handled, so that, like I said, everybody has the right to criticize the information and all that. How many more of us will have to yell foul, will have to have cut campaigns against the government saying, listen, I've been wrongly targeted, I've been wrongly accused, I've been wrongly labeled. How many more cases in Canada, because there is the case of, for example, Mayar Arar, Abdullah Al-Maki, Al-Maki, Nurdin, Abu Hussein Abdelrazik, ourselves, Adil Sharkawi, Hassan Amri. Listen, we can name cases all day of people that have been wrongly targeted. How many more of us will have to say it out loud, to say we've been wrongly labeled and targeted before the Canadian government actually does something about this? I mean, I know the Canadian government is trying to do something about the war on terror as well, but we cannot stumble on human rights in order to protect national security. We need a due process. We need to have a balance between national security and human rights, and in the security certificate case, this does not apply.
Absolutely. By turning this country into a country where we don't have rights, you know, we're certainly, probably doing more damage to it than terrorists could. Ms. Sophie Harcott, you found some allies in our society, in our culture, in the government. I'd just like you to give some people some hope there, because you have been fighting this battle for a while, and certainly there are people coming to your defense. And I want to congratulate you on your efforts. You and your husband are doing a heroic service by going through this and by having the courage to share it with everybody, so that hopefully nobody else has to, and hopefully your ordeal can end as well.
Well, yes, thank you very much. I mean, we have to thank, for example, community radio and alternative media for helping us spread this message of injustice. I have to say alternative media has played a huge role, because that's the only way we're going to get the real message out there. The media, as we know, doesn't always report the full facts or the truthful facts. And so this has been a crucial part in our campaign. For example, like the media keeps reporting that, mainstream media keeps reporting that my husband came to Canada with a fake passport, but they also forget to mention that my husband is the only sleeper agent in the world who came into this country and actually gave his fake passport and his real passport to immigration, and they have it in their hands and admitted having a fake passport. But that's what refugees do. But they also, when we went to court, the experts also said he was the only one in the world who was ever known to do that, and the concept of a sleeper agent doesn't exist. We have... We are so fortunate to have supporters across the country and across the world that believe in due process. And if you look on our website, harcottstatement.com, you will find groups and organizations that have supported us through the years. Amnesty International, Civil Liberties Monitoring Group, CareCan, all the major unions across this country are supportive. Many of the locals, we have a lot of the NDP members. There's still some NDP members that are waiting for signatures. We've got a lot of support from the NDP. We have Bruce Colbert, Naomi Klein, Heather Malik. We have, the support of Monia Mazik. And if you look on the right side, you'll see some of the prominent signatures, but we have a very impressive list of endorsements, as well as, if you view by categories, hundreds and hundreds of groups across the country who also believe in due process and who also believe that this process has no place in the Canadian democracy and that should be abolished completely. We need to eliminate the security certificate completely off the map. We don't want anyone else to be targeted under this unfair, undemocratic process. It needs to be thrown out once and for all. And we hope to take this challenge all the way back to the Supreme Court once more. And it will take years of our lives. We've already been struggling for eight and a half years now. But we will do it in order for this process to be abolished, because we don't want anybody else to go through the hell that my husband has been going through. The whole family has been turned upside down, and the whole family has been dehumanized and degraded, and the whole family has been going through the process. It's not true that it affects only refugees and immigrants. It affects Canadians. I'm a Canadian citizen, and it affected my whole family, our friends, our supporters. People that are involved in this process are also suffering. And like I said, we just want the truth to come out. That's all we want. We want the truth to come out.
Well, Ms. Sophie Harcott, on behalf of CKLN Radio and out of respect for yourself and your husband and your websites, justiceforharkat.com and harkatstatement.com, I want to thank you for your tireless efforts and your wonderfully well-spoken on these issues. You're somebody a lot of Canadians can relate to. I don't know if it's just your color, but it's also your personality and the way you approach this and your courage. That certainly resonate with people and other Canadians and can hopefully inspire some of us who haven't gone through as much as you have to get more active on issues like this in general so that we don't have to. And I want to thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, and thank you to all the Canadians out there who believe in due process and who will take time to find the petition and add their names to the long list of people that believe in due process. So please sign the statement, harcatstatement.com, and let's abolish the Q-tip to begin once and for all. Thank you very much for having me this morning.
Thank you, Sophie. And that was Ms. That was there we go. And that was Ms. Sophie Harcott, the wife of Mohammed Harcott, regarding the security certificates used here in Canada to detain people suspected of terrorist activity, although they without being formally charged. So after immigrating here in the mid-90s, and meeting his future wife-to-be, Sophie, in 2002, Mohammed Harcott was basically sold out, if I may loosely define it, by an informant working for one of our security agencies who sold him out as a terrorist, even though when they looked into it, they couldn't find any evidence that he was a terrorist. But because of that initial sort of claim by an informant for our security services, he has gone through 8 years of hell along with his wife, although courageously they are exposing the security certificates issue and making sure that not too many of us have to go through the same thing. So, again, thank you to Ms. Sophie Harcott on behalf of her husband, Mohammed Harcott. The websites are justiceforharkat.com or harkatstatement.com, where you can be one of the 3,000 or hopefully 10, 20, 100,000 million people that signed the statement here in Canada saying we don't want security certificates and we don't want Mohammed Harcott to be deported after his 8-year ordeal. So hope you enjoyed that, folks. A couple of notes here before Mr. William Watson, a.k.a. Bill Watson, a.k.a. the Jazz Bungee Master, takes over and takes you on a 4-hour Jazz Bungee experience you will most certainly enjoy because he is a local legend in the making. I'd like to apologize for not getting into the stuff about Japan in more detail here on the show. I know that that it's a concern out there to people. Definitely look into iodine for your health or iodide to protect your thyroid and your body and your health against radiation poisoning. I'm not saying, you know, the radiation in Japan is going to hit Toronto, although it might hit Vancouver and the West Coast, so let the listeners out there, by all means, look into it. But more specifically, there's radiation out there in our environment anyway on a regular basis. And so, if you are concerned about that, this is as good a way as any to find out about what you can do about radiation. Look into iodine or iodide. You can get it from kelp or seaweed. And check out Infowars.com, where they've done incredible work on the situation in Japan right now. I know it's a really big concern out there, but I also know that we have to sort of consistently find ways to care about things that we can affect here in our own country. We can't care about the Arab protests 1 week and then the Japanese tsunami nuclear meltdown the next week and then, you know, something else the week after. You know, in this era of globalization, the entire world's attention will be directed towards one crisis after another while we don't notice that we've been robbed of 10% of our living standards over the last year in the sense that it costs 10% more to buy all the same stuff we used to. So we're just getting jacked, for that. But the good news is gas has dropped a bit to $1.18 from $1.25 it was at. So maybe we're going to be getting some more candy. I think that our system can sense that Canadians are a little grumpy about what's going on. So hopefully, we leverage that and get some more out of our system, especially with an upcoming federal election expected this spring. Our media is kind of saying, it's boring. It's probably not going to change much, you know, blah, blah, blah. And our options are kind of limited when it comes to prime minister. But at the same time, this is a prime opportunity to actually ask for something and get something from our political system. If we don't act during elections, if we don't act during municipal elections, federal elections coming up this spring, provincial elections coming up in October, then when will we act? If we don't make our politicians accountable when they want our vote, then it's much more difficult to do it any other time. Although, still recommend emailing, calling, phoning them, petitioning them, setting up meetings with them, because you can accomplish many, many things by simply talking to the system instead of just complaining about it in an abstract sense. So hopefully getting more details on that. I'm thinking of running for MP myself. Just leveraging the 2,000 votes I got running for mayor last in the fall, and running for MP maybe against Bob Ray or Olivia Chow here downtown. And if I don't happen to win, I'd like to. But if I don't have to win, then leveraging the results of that into running for MPP in October when the provincial elections come up, because we do need people in there who can muck around. Maybe not given enough power to mess everything up, but certainly given enough power inside the system to investigate things, ask questions, get us answers, and share them. So check out my website, whatyouwanttobelievein.com, whatyouwanttobelievein.com, for more details on that, including my contact information. And I appreciate your help and your support should I decide to do these things, because without it, I won't. But with it, I'll certainly do my best for this country to step up to the plate and to get active on issues that concern us. So before I go, a couple of websites to shout out. Again, for more on the situation in Japan, Infowars.com, a great place to go. Naturalnews.com, excellent health information there. Fluoridealert.org to look into the risks of fluoride. Hopefully we'll get out of the water soon this year, as previous guests Carol Clinch and Sylvain Henry on Monday suggested was most certainly possible. There's apparently a ton of activity going on in Ontario and across Canada on the fluoride issue. Let's start seeing that bubble to the surface so that all of us know why Calgary, Montreal, Vancouver, and most of Europe and many other cities who figured out what's going on don't use fluoride. VRAN.org for legal vaccine exemption forms. Don't worry about it. Just look into the risks of it and try not to take any medication before you're sick. It can become a bad habit. SeedsOfDeception.com for GMO foods. VigilantCitizen.com for excellent articles on our pop culture controllers, including a new one on the Lady Gaga video for Born This Way. And they're flexing Illuminati. They're pro-Illuminati, folks. They're going pretty hard at pimping the symbology out there. It's getting really, really obvious. She's even got a new song called Government Hooker, so you know it's just getting kind of silly, the stuff we're being exposed to. Let's just make sure our response to it isn't silly as well. So cuttingthroughthematrix.com, Alan Watts, excellent work, a philosophical overview of what's going on, and a great place. He's a Canadian national treasure and a gift to the world. Locally, pressfortruth.ca, pressfortruth.ca, new screening of Into the Fire about G20 martial law. That start happening on April 22nd at the Bloor Cinema. Go to pressfortruth.ca for more details. See and share the new trailer for Into the Fire. This could be the movie, as the editor and owner of Press for Truth and the editor, the director of Into the Fire, Dan Dick, says this could be the movie that helps finally push, finally get us an independent, full investigation into what happened at G20, who made the calls at the top, at the federal level, at the international level, at the different levels of law enforcement, who ordered our cops, troops, mercs, and spooks to do things that should not happen in this country. So pressfortruth.ca, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, still active on the streets every Saturday, network with about 500 other Canadians on these issues, and looking forward to joining them possibly this Saturday at Dundas Square, so hope to see you there. ConspiracyCulture.com, book and DVD store, putting on to the Into the Fire screening along with Press for Truth. Victor Fletcher's Toronto Street News newspaper out there, definitely great place to get some good karma by giving a homeless guy a couple of bucks and getting yourself some good information. TorontoG20Exposed.com, another great movie on the G20. NAUResistance.org to look at the overall North American Union security and trade deals that are affecting every aspect of our lives. The bottom line is, folks, is that we can do stuff about this. If Sophie Harcourt and her husband, Mohammed Harcourt, after being literally persecuted by our law enforcement agencies in this country for 8 years, can do something, then those of us out there with a bit more free time and a bit more of a bit more freedom to act can certainly take action at this time in history. So hopefully we do soon, folks. And hopefully you folks enjoyed the show and have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Peace out.